was frustrated with his people. They wouldn't listen to anything that he was saying. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted him to do what? To go back and be a little bit more patient. His tabiqi awla was what? That he left his people too soon. Allah said, look, you need some time to think about this. But you can sense the emotion of Nabi Yunus. In this verse, it talks about the ghadab of Yunus, the anger of Yunus, that emotion of Yunus, that anger or that anxiety, that stress that, oh my God, they're not listening to what I'm saying. It took a little bit of Allah said, look, spend some time in this darkness in the belly of the whale. Understand what's going on. You'll come to a conclusion. And so the Quran says, فَنَابَ فِي الظُّلُمَاتِ أَنْ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا أَنْتَ سُبْحَانَكَ إِنِّي كُنْتُ مِنَ الظَّالِمِينَ. Right? In that darkness, he cries out after restoring a little bit of his emotions now and controlling his anger. He says that glory be to you, Allah. There's no power but you. Inni kuntum min al-zalimin. I'm the one that made that mistake. It took a little bit of a break, a little bit of an escape, a little bit of seclusion, isolation from the people for him to come to that realization. But here, the emotion that the Quran refers to is the ghadab and the anger of Nabi Yunus. Meaning, again, a prophet of Allah. All of this is just to tell all of you and myself that these feelings, you know, are not only for those who challenge God, who complain to God. No, of course not. Of course not. So it's okay to feel these emotions. ليك كل من ملك لبيك قد لبيت لك.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. سبحانه ما أعظم والملك لا شريك له لبيك إن الحمد لك والعز لا
Muslims in Sarajevo. In the 1990s, a big crime was committed in Southeast Europe, which reminded the world of the Middle Ages. The Bosniaks were killed by other groups in former Yugoslavia because they said no to the formation of Serbia and its independence, and more importantly, because they were Muslims. Genocide was committed against Bosniaks in order to cleanse the Green Continent of Muslims and consign Islam into oblivion forever. But a different fate awaited the Bosniaks. Prior to the arrival of Islam in Bosnia, the Bogomils were united Christians and were resisting the preachers of the Roman Church. In the 11th century, merchants from Khorasan entered this region for business. Their behavior, which was based on their Islamic thought, led to the introduction of Islam in this region, where people accepted the religion and embraced it. Sarajevo, the capital city of Bosnia and Herzegovina, shares borders with Serbia and Croatia. Bosnia and Herzegovina is a country which has survived hundreds of years of genocide and has managed to keep Islam alive by itself in Europe. One of the existing Islamic symbols in Sarajevo is a water-drinking place called Sakohone, which is located in an old neighborhood of the city. It is said that a total of 72 such places had been built in Sarajevo in memory of the 72 companions of the third Shia Imam Hussein, who were martyred during the Battle of Karbala. Currently, one of those places has turned into a cultural symbol of Bosnia and Herzegovina and its capital city. Sarajevo also has a library which is regarded as a hub of history books on the Balkan Peninsula. The Gazi Husrev Beg Library, dating back to 500 years ago, has more than 10,000 books and collections of manuscripts in Arabic, Ottoman, and Persian. At midday in the summer, Franz Ferdinand, the heir to the throne of Austro-Hungary, and his wife were shot and killed by a young Serbian man in Sarajevo. The murder ignited the First World War that led to an end to Ottoman rule on Bosnia and put it under Austro-Hungary control. Following the Second World War, the competition between communism and liberalism resulted in the formation of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia by the Balkan countries, and that marked the beginning of a new era for Muslims in this region. Collapse of the Soviet Union, the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia witnessed changes as well, and various regions there declared independence. Slavs in Slovenia, Croats in Croatia, and Muslims in Bosnia and Herzegovina. But the formation of a Muslim-majority country that opposed the establishment of a Serbian government was not to the liking of European leaders. A day after a referendum on independence, a plot was hatched that caused the genocide of Muslims in this region. The war made the Bosnian people try to revive their Islamic identity, and they were divided into military battalions to reach their goal and defend Islam and humanity. People in this country have gone through what could have brought an end to their life and left only memories from them. But instead, the same path presented them the beginning of a new life, and the secret behind that was the unity and resistance they had. People in Bosnia give much importance to Islamic rituals. Muslims in this country are especially very enthusiastic about religious festivities such as Eid al-Adha, Eid al-Fitr, and the fasting month of Ramadan. Muslims in Sarajevo gather in the highest part of the city, awaiting iftar when they break their fast. At dusk, artillery is fired to announce iftar, a measure that children and teenagers like very much. Artillery is fired as a sign to announce the end of the fasting month of Ramadan and the arrival of Eid al-Fitr. Those who have fasted eat their iftar meal to break their fast on the last day of Ramadan and congratulate each other on this occasion. On Eid al-Fitr morning, before sunrise, groups of people go to the venue where Eid prayer is held. A few people would forget the first time that they took part in Eid al-Fitr prayers. Fathers, hand in hand with their sons, go to the venue of the prayers to join other people taking part in the ritual. Congregational prayers at mosques as well as ceremonies to serve iftar coupled with Eid al-Fitr prayers have integrated Bosnian Muslims, and they keep trying to maintain that as much as they can. Christmas and the birth anniversary of Jesus Christ is the most important festival in Europe. But in Bosnia and Herzegovina, where the majority of people are Muslims, Eid al-Fitr is and has long been the most important religious festivity. Muslims believe that death is not the end of life and that life will continue in afterworld. Based on this belief, people in Bosnia go to graveyards on Eid al-Fitr to remember and commemorate their loved ones who have died and recite parts of the Holy Quran for them. Part of celebrations on Eid al-Fitr in Bosnia, family members along with parents gather and have lunch. The meal includes foods that are made especially on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr. The younger members of the family say congratulations to the elder and celebrate Eid along with them. Every year, on the second day of Eid al-Fitr celebrations, Muslims in Bosnia and Herzegovina hold a ceremony to commemorate war martyrs. The ceremony, during which parts of the Holy Quran are recited, is held in cemeteries where the martyrs are buried. Rasul Haydari was an Iranian military advisor who had come to Bosnia to help people there during the war. Years on since his martyrdom, Bosnians say they still owe him a great deal, and each year they commemorate him on the anniversary of his death.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, keeping promises.
make promises for a lot of reasons, and our intentions are usually good. For example, we want to help other people to make them happy or to make something happen. But sadly, our actions don't always measure up to the promises that we make. Now, some of the reasons we don't keep our word include, number one, we don't realize that we've made or implied a promise. Sometimes, you know, we say things and we don't really mean them. And the other side, you know, who is talking to you, they may get a very clear impression that you are making a commitment or a promise, while we just said it, you know, we didn't mean it really. Number two, we forget what we have said. You know, some people have, like, you know, bad short-term memory and so on and so forth, right? We sometimes forget. Number three, we get sidetracked by other events. Something major happened in our life and a promise that we had made and we wanted to keep it, but then, you know, it was not that important for us and we just, you know, got sidetracked. Number four, we lose enthusiasm when we realize that keeping our word is harder than what we expected. This also happens with a lot of people. You know, we make promises, we make commitments, we give our words, but then later on we realize, well, why in the world did I make this commitment, right? So this is another reason why our actions don't sync up with our promises sometimes. Number five, we haven't allowed enough time, or we have a scheduling conflict, right? Again, this is a common scenario. Last but not the least is we lack the power to do what we have said we would do. Sometimes we make promises that are beyond our control. And this is where we have to be careful, brothers and sisters. When we make promises, when we give commitments, we have to think through what we are committing to. And once we are committed, we have to keep our promises. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing keeping promises and why sometimes our actions, they are contrary to what we have promised to others. Now, what is the impact of false promises is something I want to highlight here. You know, at a very social level, of course, the Islamic instructions are very clear, you know, all those losses that we're going to incur in this world and the hereafter, they're very clear. But we want to talk about very social level impact of making false promises or not fulfilling our promises. Well, you may get away with letting someone down once or twice, but the consequences can be deep and enduring if you go back on your promises too often, whether or not it's intentional. Your coworkers will likely hesitate to ask you for help again, and you might find yourself excluded from discussions, and your manager may start allocating projects to some more reliable people, and you could lose certain privileges. If you're a manager, let's say, your people may grow dissatisfied with your leadership or lose respect for you. They'll put more effort into developing a backup plan in case you don't deliver than getting the job done. As a result, your team's motivation and performance will drop off. You know, we've seen even in Islamic projects, you know, when we volunteer for a cause, you know, and then we do not make it on time. But what does it do to other people? It takes away that passion from them. It takes away that enthusiasm from them. They don't trust you anymore because you just didn't show up on time. So how can they rely on you for something bigger? So these are some of the implications of making false commitments and promises. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. government records show that Enrique Tarrio, chairman of the far-right Proud Boys group, received two federal government-backed Paycheck Protection Program loans worth a total of $15,500. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Jason Wilson. The piece is titled, Proud Boys Leader Received COVID-19 Stimulus Loans Worth $15,500. U.S. government records show that Enrique Tarrio, chairman of the far-right Proud Boys group, received two federal government-backed Paycheck Protection Program loans worth a total of $15,500. Enrique Tarrio, based in Miami, Florida, was approved for an initial loan of $7,750 on 30th of March this year, and a succeeding loan for the same amount on 16th of April. The loans were issued to Henry Tarrio, an anglicized form of his name, which he has used on other occasions. The Proud Boys began as an organization protesting against political correctness and boosting their idea of masculinity, and grew into a right-wing group that embraced street fighting. Earlier this year, Canada named it as a terrorist organization. It is seen as having played an important role in the 6th of January assault on the Capitol in Washington, D.C. In the loan documentation, which was obtained by the news nonprofit ProPublica after a Freedom of Information Act battle with the Small Business Administration, Enrique Tarrio is described as an independent contractor working in the security systems services industry, but the document names no associated business entity. Additional information provided to The Guardian by ProPublica shows that the street address on the loan application is associated with both Enrique Tarrio and one of the limited liability companies for which he's named as an officer in Florida state records. Those records show Enrique Tarrio as an officer in a number of inactive limited liability companies, including Spy Security LLC, Fund the West LLC, and Proud Boys LLC. In a questionnaire he completed for the Ballotpedia website in the course of an abortive 2020 congressional run, Enrique Tarrio described himself as the proprietor of several companies that were involved in the surveillance and security industries. However, Tarrio was not found to be a licensed security officer in a search of Florida state records. Another company, War Boys LLC, was voluntarily dissolved on 7th of April. Records show that Enrique Tarrio is the registered agent for that company. and Joe Biggs and Ethan Nordine are also officers. Joe Biggs, also of Florida, and Ethan Nordine of Washington State are jointly facing federal conspiracy charges relating to their alleged participation in the riot at the Capitol on 6th of January. In the lead-up to those events, Tario was arrested and charged over weapons offenses and the alleged vandalism of a black church in Washington, D.C. at a previous election-related rally. Following these charges, Enrique Tario was banned from entering Washington, D.C. and did not participate in the 6th of January protests and rioting. No other Florida-based businesses are associated with a Proud Boys leader in that state's public records. Government-backed Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP loans, were first issued under the CARES Act in 2020, under the Trump administration, as a stimulus measure to an economy battered by the COVID-19 pandemic. The program was revived in January of 2021 under the Biden administration, and businesses were able to apply for loans up to 31st of March this year. Enrique Tario's loan was issued as part of a second round of government-backed Paycheck Protection Program funding. One criteria for eligibility was that recipients not be a business concern or entity primarily engaged in political or lobbying activities. Government-backed Paycheck Protection Program loans are forgiven when it can be shown that at least 60% of money was spent on payroll costs. Independent contractors can use the loans to replace claimed lost earnings and apply for forgiveness in order to keep the money. Although Enrique Tario took federal stimulus money, he has long been criticized as a key promoter of disinformation about the pandemic and measures to counteract its spread, including wearing face masks and lockdowns. In 2020, at the height of the pandemic's first wave, counterterrorism researchers at the Middlebury Institute noted that Proud Boys-related platforms showed widespread engagement with violent conspiracy theories, with disinformation and promotion of narratives that downplayed the COVID-19 pandemic. Enrique Tario did not immediately respond to a request for comment.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamun alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems and questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of teenagers. And the answers are mostly based upon the Quran and the narrations of our beloved Imams, alayhim as-salam. I'm Hasnain, and we have in the studio our guest speaker, Sheikh Farman Ali Ma'soumi. He's an Islamic researcher in the Hawdha Ilmiya Qom. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Brother Farman.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So, Brother Farman, one of our listeners has written to us that what does Islam say about teenagers giving importance to their physical appearance? So, this is another question that many parents have nowadays. So, what do you have to say about it?
Yeah, again, I would like to say that totally Islam says, you know, you have to always have a good appearance, physical appearance, yeah. Mm-hmm. Islam emphasizes using perfume always. Even for namaz, Islam says if you are praying your salah with perfume, its reward is, if I do not mistake, hadith says 70 times more your prayer will have the reward, a single prayer. So, you know, an-nidhafatu min al-iman.
True.
One of the very famous ahadith, if it is not ahadith, but it is very common saying, So cleanliness and having a very good physical appearance is very good. So in this age, in teenage, they are, as I said, more sensitive. They are very sensitive about their physical appearance, They see themselves in their mobile capturing selfies. So Islam says, it is okay. As long as it is normal.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they do in a normal way, you know. But if they give it priority upon their, you know, wajibat and other things, duties, then it is problematic. Otherwise, it's okay. Because Islam also says, you know, خُزُوا زِينَتَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدْ.
Okay.
Islam says wear nice clothes and have a very, very nice physical appearance and go to the mosque.
Mm-hmm.
And for, you know, gatherings and in your families also, between wife and husband and children, Islam always says be very nice, clean, and have a physical good appearance. So our teenagers, they pay more attention, so it's okay. So let them pay attention to their physical appearance. And hadith also say always, you know, it is a good thing for them. You know, this is their demand of their age. So let them spend time. Let them, you know, comb in front of mirror, and let them, you know, put perfumes and creams and, you know, a lot of these makeup things. Especially, you know, if you are a girl, they are very sensitive, more sensitive than boys.
True.
So as long as it is, you know, not haram, then they are allowed and it's okay. So you have to compromise with them regarding this issue.
Thanks so much, Brother Farman. So, dear audience, let's take a short break over here and we'll be right back after that.
Ya Muqiya al-Khayrat, Ya Muqiya al-Khayrat.
Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam said, wear clothes and beautify yourselves. For indeed, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is beauty, and He loves beautification.
Welcome back to your audience, and before the break, we were discussing that it's not a problem that children paying attention to their physical appearance. Brother Farman, please continue.
Paying attention is a very, very positive thing.
Yeah.
As I said, there are a lot of ahadiths regarding combing your hair, brushing your teeth, and having, you know, clean clothes.
Like, in fact, Islam says us to, you know, maintain good
generally maintain good physical appearance. And teenagers, they are very sensitive. They need more time.
True.
So it's okay. There are detailed ahadiths, you know, about nail cutting and using perfume and, you know, using oil for your hairs and even, you know, having good shoes. So, which shows, Islam is such a beautiful and detailed religion.
True.
Which gives you very, very details about each and every aspect of your life.
That's
you
true,
know
yeah.
your social life, your personal life, your, you know, family life. So regarding teenagers also, we have that they are like a flower.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
Okay.
And a flower needs more attention.
That's right, yeah.
You know, a lot of sun heat can, you know,
yeah.
have bad impact on it, and a lot of water destroys it, so yeah. you have to be moderate, you know.
True.
It means you have to be very cautious and careful about
everything,
your teenagers.
Everything has to be in the right proportion.
Right way and right time. So if you have a girl, so be careful about makeup and physical appearance, which is haram, which is not allowed in Islamic religion. So
the hijab should be
hijab should be there, and the haram things you have to avoid, and you have to teach her that these things are haram. You can't use this makeup, you know, in front of non-mahram.
Yeah.
And these things are allowed. And if you have a boy, you know, you have to provide with all the things which he needs, you know,
yeah.
good dressings and good physical, you know, appearance, good elements for physical appearance.
True.
So Islam emphasizes, and it has a reward also.
Mm-hmm.
Look again at the beautiful Islam. You know, you are doing things for your son, for your own self, but again, it has a reward and thawab for providing, you know, sustenance to your family and your children, for providing good clothing to your children. You know, each step you take has a lot of sawab.
Mashallah.
You know, sometimes
yeah.
the hadith say the sawab has more than a hajj, sawab of
mm-hmm.
a hajj you can get. So this is the beautiful religion of Islam. So we have to be thankful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we are in a Muslim family, especially Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, the true khulafa of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Imam Raza alayhi as-salam says in a hadith that in general, you have to use perfume on daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in... look at the time when our Imam Raza alayhi salam was living, you know, 1,100 years before. In that time, you know, they didn't have that much perfume.
True.
Yeah, perfume was very precious for them because it was very rare and expensive.
True.
And look at the ahadith of Ahlul Bayt and Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. They have emphasized on having perfume at your home, you know, and using it on daily basis.
True.
And Imam Raza says, if you cannot offer, so once, you know, every second day you have to use.
Every alternate day.
Yeah, alternate day. If that also you can't afford, at least every 3-4 days you have to use the perfume.
Oh, so it's given a lot of importance.
Yeah, given, and perfume has a lot of thawab. And for our teenagers, we have to provide this perfume, you know, always. MashaAllah, nowadays, all the families, they have. But I'm emphasizing that if they forget or if they neglect this, they shouldn't do.
Thank you so much, Brother Farman. And thank you so much, dear audience. Let's take a short break over here.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear audience. And before the break, we were discussing about the importance of using fragrance in hadith. Brother Farman, please continue.
Yeah. So we were discussing the hadith of Imam Raza, the 8th Imam.
Yeah.
Imam Ali ibn Musa Rida alayhi salam, he said, if you can't afford to have perfume on daily basis, so use every alternate days.
Yeah.
If you can't afford every third day, you have to use.
Yeah.
If still you can't afford, so on Fridays, you know, at least on Fridays you have to use perfume.
Yeah.
So this hadith shows that Friday, why Friday? because of the prayers, Friday prayers. Yeah. If you go and you mingle with your friends and with your
society, you need to smell good.
So which again shows that Islam emphasizes on these very, very important small details. So another issue regarding our teenagers is we have to give them a role model. You know, a good role model regarding, we are talking about the physical appearance. And nowadays, our teenagers, they have worldly role models. It's some like football stars or singing stars or film stars, whatever they have. So again, riwayat and ahadith say, do not force them, do not punish them for these things. As long as they are in the limits of Islam, it's okay.
Interesting.
But our parents' duty is to provide them a good role model for their physical appearance also. You know, like we can give them an alim's role, we can show them an alim as a role model, or, you know, an, religious, any
person's role model.
So it's easy for them to have. Especially nowadays, we have a lot of films, religious films also there. They have a, we have good characters.
Yeah, true.
So we can encourage them to use these role models to have a role model for themselves, you know. So this is a very, very vast topic, and we can discuss a lot regarding having a good role model in our life. Yeah, definitely, if time allows, inshallah, in the coming episodes, we will talk and discuss.
So thank you so much, Brother Farman, and thank you so much, dear audience. In this program, we're discussing about the physical appearance, and we said that even Islam emphasizes on good physical appearance. It was asked in the question how to deal with that. So we got to know that it's not a problem if the children or the teenagers are paying attention to their physical appearance. And we said that we need to teach them the right way, like to any boy or girl. We need to teach them the limits and the boundaries of Islam so that they don't perform any haram acts. So we said that even in the ahadith, the fragrance and the perfume is given a lot of importance. So we need to provide our children with that. And the last thing which we said was we need to provide children with good role models so that they can follow the right path. Thank you so much, Brother Farman, and thank you so much to your audience for staying with us. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, farstoday.com. Until another program, fi amanullah.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
Interpol is the only police and intelligence authority that truly claims to span the world. Yet this international body has proved to be too susceptible to abuse by despotic regimes. In fact, Interpol has suffered considerable problems with improper influence from some member states whose legal and political systems are at odds with international standards or even basic human rights. The United Arab Emirates is a glaring example of a state seeking to improperly influence Interpol through its petrodollars and other mechanisms. Whereas some human rights changes have been made in the UAE, critics say those changes amount to barely more than window dressing, with torture and repression still as a stock in trade of the country. It is not hard to imagine what would happen if Abu Dhabi heads Interpol, something which many insiders consider as an imminent danger. process of electing a president of Interpol is shrouded in secrecy. No list of candidates is published in advance, and therefore rumors and speculation are rife. However, there are a number of credible reports that indicate the UAE security chief is campaigning to become Interpol's next president. Last year, the Telegraph revealed Major General Nasser Ahmed al-Raisi is a shoo-in for the role, a prestigious position which would give him insight into and cloud over police forces across the globe.
It would definitely set a very dangerous precedent if a person like this could rise to such international position, to such international power. And it would definitely, I think, make a precedent if this could be done with a donation of a mere $50 million, which is, on an international scale, especially for wealthy nations, not that much. This would, I'm afraid, set a precedent for countries, for example, such as, you know, Saudi Arabia, such as Israel, such as some of the other Gulf states, to pursue similar interests. And this is something that is definitely, it's a bad example to the world.
During his term in office as General Inspector of the UAE Ministry of the Interior, al-Raisi has been accused of grave violations of human rights over the past decade. In the words of former director of the UK Public Prosecutions, Sir David Calvert-Smith, in all circumstances, al-Raisi's election would send a message to the world that Interpol has little or no respect for human rights and will turn a blind eye to torture and repression.
We've seen in the past few years that people have been arrested in the Emirates for very, very flimsy reasons. There are people, for example, activists for the Bedouin population, the stateless population in the UAE. We have seen foreigners arrested of based on very flimsy, so quote-unquote, evidence that they would be spies. We've seen people arrested for criticizing the royal members of the royal dynasty on social media, not even calling for revolution or insurrection, but just criticizing.
Perhaps one of the blatant cases of Emirati injustice over the past few years is that of Matthew Hedges, a British academic who was detained in the UAE in May 2018. Major General al-Raisi has been accused of presiding over the torture of Matthew, who claims to have been beaten up, electrocuted, denied food and water, and given a cocktail of high-strength drugs to combat his panic attacks and depression. Mr. Hedges says he was also forced to sign a confession in Arabic, a language he did not speak.
We're talking about a man who has been reviled and criticized, not just in countries that are traditionally opposed to the UAE, but even by Emirati allies such as the United Kingdom. He is responsible for a big part for a breakdown in relations a few years back between the UAE and the United Kingdom after the arrest, imprisonment, and torture of two British citizens who later turned out to have done nothing wrong at all. Of course, they were released eventually, but these people have suffered for several months out of under brutal torture for very for no reason at all, really. They were accused of spying for MI6, which is a strange accusation to make in a country that is already allied to the United Kingdom, of course. So this is a man who stands accused of abuse of power, of a clash of interests, mixing the interests of his own and of certain powers that be with the interests of his position as a man who should normally just take care of fighting crime and protecting the people.
As the Interpol website sets out, there are two main sources of income for Interpol: statutory contributions from membership of each member country and voluntary funding. The statutory fees paid by each member country are supposed to be based on their economic weight. Suspiciously enough, in 2017, when the UAE's statutory contribution was €231,064, the country made a €50 million donation to the Interpol Foundation for a Safer World, an organization which lobbies governments and companies to support Interpol's work. It appears that the UAE is the only country to have contributed to the foundation. According to a recent report on the issue titled Undue Influence, the UAE and Interpol, it is difficult to escape the conclusion that the Interpol Foundation for a Safer World's sole purpose is to be a channel by which to funnel cash from the UAE government into Interpol.
Interpol normally works with a relatively small amount of budget for an international organization overseen by the United Nations, for an organization of their size. And when you see a sudden influx of $50 million being given in one go by one country, this should definitely raise some eyebrows and ring a few alarm bells as to the impartiality that an organization like Interpol can have after being so financially dependent of one single country in the entire world of the over 180 member states that we have.
In fact, the huge donation has been regarded as an attempt by Abu Dhabi to buy its way into Interpol. British barrister Ben Keith believes this is another attempt by a despotic country to get their person elected as the president of Interpol. The money is there, the power base is there, they're hosting the assembly. This is the best chance they have, and the candidate is clearly the front runner.
The most important, I think, reason why a country in general would want to have such influence on Interpol is the possibility of the Red Notice system. The Red Notice system is a system in which you can flag individuals that are considered to be of particular interest to a country, to a member state of Interpol, and it's considered to be dangerous. And normally, under normal circumstances, every member state is expected to sort of cooperate in the apprehension and arrest, and if necessary, the extradition of these individuals that are flagged under the Red Notice system. There is a significant concern also within the United Kingdom, where this report was published recently. It was a British report, that even the British are concerned that the Emiratis might seek to abuse the Red Notice system in order to have the possibility to arrest people that they consider to be dangerous. And this does not necessarily mean criminals or terrorists or dangerous political activists.
As the Emirati representative, Al-Raisi is a kingpin of a security apparatus that systematically targets peaceful critics, turning the country into a police state. The list of things Abu Dhabi should do before fielding credible candidates for the presidency of Interpol is long, but it begins with putting an end to the practice of torture and arbitrary detentions.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.